Okay, it's 3:00. Call this meeting to order on March 25th. Would you please stand and join in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, this time is public comments, and I know we've got one guest here, Mr. Dave Hotchkiss. You're on, my friend.
Okay, nobody else? Just me. Okay. Hi, I'm David Hotchkiss. I live on St. Joe's and Google. I'm fairly new in town, 4 or 5 years. A lot of people refer to us as the Trump House. During Christmas hours, you know who we are. I'm here just to voice some opinions. I was lucky enough to have a grandfather that taught me a lot about renowned scientists and taught me a lot about electricity and some other things that helped me in my career, which I'm now retired. But I know what electricity is about and so on. So I built my own solar with the help of you people and some other ways, things that I did. What I didn't understand is some of the formalities that are about it. So I'm not upset. I'm just voicing my opinion, I guess, and would love an answer or two from Twitter or just how it goes. So here it is. My first one is, why do we flush the credits? Big one right there. Secondly, if you flush them, can't we do that or change that either in March or September after or during when you need them most? They flush it when? End of the year. Am I correct on that? Yeah. And when you need it? When you have the least amount of sun on January, February, December, right around there. So that one didn't make sense to me. And then the third one is, I did that. I built a shop on my property. I ran out of power, so I did the smart thing, ran a whole other line. Did it all through you guys, paid a bunch of money to have it dug and trenched in the new meter, and you got to be promised all that, so on. Long story short, I pay another base fee and a thing, and I'm okay with that. What I don't understand is that if at the end of the year, my first year, I had a $365 credit that I built up. Oh, we disappear in the summer, get out of the heat, we go to our cabin in the middle of nowhere near Wyoming. Long story short again, I'm gone. So I turn the AC to 85 in just the lower area, and it sits there. So that thing's running around for everybody else. I'm doing the right thing and saving electricity and making it for somebody else. Someone else is using that electricity. Has to be. Point I'm trying to make is, on the other end of this, the credits, or flushing them, I can't even use those credits or such for my own other meter. Again, I have 2 meters, one on the garage, one on the house. And I don't have to go into the technical side, but we just have a lot of stuff we use. So I just think that's kind of unfair that you should not only lose it, but you can't use it for your other one. So that's it. I guess my 3 minutes are up, and that's what I wanted to say.
You actually got 21 seconds left. Do you want to see?
That's
Thank you, Dave.
You bet.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I respond to him? Would that be okay?
Certainly.
First off, thank you for coming.
You bet.
We like that when you have something that you'd like to discuss with us, that you come here and talk with us about it. So thank you. The first thing I would say is stay in the summer. And then you will use up so much more of those credits, right?
He doesn't exist.
I just want to give you an update and let you know that at the first of the year, we put together an internal committee to redo our net metering policy. And the committee presented that to our management group last month. We gave them some suggestions. One of that was to investigate the difference of doing that clear out in April as opposed to December. They're analyzing that, and they will be bringing us that information back in the next month or two, and then we will be presenting that to the board. So we are keenly aware that there are some updates and things that we could do to get better, and we will be presenting that to our board, hopefully early summer.
Okay, that makes sense.
So you may have to come back from the cabin to hear, but then you'll use some of that electricity, okay?
Can you believe that? Could they have the feasibility of having like an ability for someone like him to use credits if they have 2 meters?
Yes, of course.
Also, I just want to make mention of the fact that it's our financier, man, Mr. Jonathan's birthday today. So.
Happy birthday, John Alvin.
Thank you, Mom. Yes.
You're turning 40 again, right?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Let's see, is he raising daughters?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, one.
Okay. Anybody in Mesquite? Who's hiding around the corner? Is it Karina?
Karina, yes. Poke your head out so we can see you and say hi.
There you are.
There's nobody here, so there's no public coming.
Okay, thank you.
No, thank you.
Like a motion for the acceptance of the agenda for today.
I move we accept today's agenda as presented.
We have a motion.
One second.
And Mr. Russ seconds. Everybody in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Approval for the minutes of the previous meeting on February 18th for possible action.
Mr. Chair, I have a comment. Stephen, if you could please pull up the minutes. We received a suggested comment change from Mr. Young on the minutes. Those changes were approved. However, there was an error in the posting. What was printed and prepared included his comments, but what was posted online did not. And so we have those changes redlined, and we would suggest that anybody who approves the minutes, please take time to read those and approve it as presented there. That's what's in front of you. It's just not what was online. Those three sentences in the red did not get posted on our website.
Okay, thank you.
I move we approve them since they
included. Yes, if you're a good your name was in there.
We apologize, Mr. Young. That was human error, and we will not let that happen again.
Looks good. Thank you for your hard work. Okay, we have a motion.
I'll second it.
Thank you. We got a second. That was Bob.
Chad.
Thank you.
Can you vote on that?
Oh, is we going to vote on that?
All in favor. All in favor.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. For the chairman's report, got a very, very important presentation to make. Mr. Randy Law, if you'd come up here right by Becky, that would be really good.
What time? What time?
I thought he was not going to come for
that. I don't know what I did.
Can we do it on this side?
You tell us where to be. She just said move up front.
Yes.
Right here in front of this door.
Sure.
Let's get you right.
What do you want? What do you want? Let me push me around a little bit.
We're doing behind short, medium. I like this guy so much.
Hold on, let him hold it.
Oh, very good. So, when you become certified as a board member, you take a series of five classes, and then they give you a certificate for doing so. Then there's two more levels, one for board leadership, and then your gold certificate, which I know Mr. Young holds, and
you hold,
and I hold, and what about Rich? Getting close, though.
Getting close.
Rich goes to him and takes classes. So we appreciate Randy's hard work and getting done so quickly. It hasn't been on a year. So I think that's great.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
Close.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. You get to keep the pin.
Oh, there you go.
You can put that on, get on through board meeting. Also, we have a thank you letter here on behalf of Miss Lydia Dominguez, who I happen to know that Randy knows personally because they campaigned for each other. And she was thanking the power company for their contribution of $3,655 in the Roundup program. So I just think that's outstanding. Appreciate your support. And if we could just get to the point where we could give as much as Virgin Valley does, then I would feel better about it at all. But we don't have as much population, right?
Barely.
Okay. Mr. Attorney, you got a report?
I don't have anything.
Okay. I know we're going to have an executive session. And all right, so let's go to our management report, Ms. Melissa.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to start with safety first, so Kaya will kick us off.
Okay. Land operations report for the month of March. Safety meeting was held on February 19th here in this office, in this particular building. The topic was CPR and AED, which is one of our obviously most important topics we go through. We do that annually. It's only required biannually, but we choose to do it annually so that it's just sound inside these employees' minds. If ever, heaven forbid, they need to call on those trainings, it's going to come easily to them. We had 57 people in attendance. Had a great day that day. Right after that CPR and AED training, 20 of the employees joined in here for a flagger certification course. It was provided by NTS, which is National Trench Safety. We've used them previously for our shoring practices training, which we haven't done this particular certification in some time, so it was great to have done and get back up on our certs. You can see the picture there. It was a long course. It was a four-hour course with a test at the end. This was about 2.5 hours in. We were done with sitting, so it's time to stand. And
wherever that is in the middle, I totally identify that.
It's like, stop. Stop the traffic. That's right. He's making a seance there, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. Outage report for the month of February. We had listed here four unplanned outages, but in reality, there's three. There's one error, which is line number 6. It was miscategorized. But otherwise, we had a great month with only three unplanned outages. The largest one to note is line item 5 with 195 minutes, but that is mostly because of the fact that it was noticed by our metering system. Our metering team noticed that particular meter lost a phase. It's a three-phase bank. It lost one phase. They happened to be monitoring it, and they noticed that. They called the crews, and they responded. It wasn't like we were responding to an emergency call for an outage. So, great month with outages. Plenty of other maintenance work sprinkled in there as well. Service installations for the month of February, we have 28 total, one commercial in Overton, and then all of the residential, obviously still in the northwest section of Mesquite area, are the vast majority. For the year, we're up to 70 now and continuing to climb. Last week was the NREA best practices. I don't know if you saw the post that Vernon did for us. Great post. It's my most favorite event of the year. I always enjoy this event because it's the two general sessions there, the sharing of best practices. They're given by staff at the various utilities around, at the lineman level, the apprentice level, the subtech level. Those are the folks that are giving those presentations. So it comes from that aspect. They're sharing the best practices that they're proud of, that they've learned hard lessons from, that their utility has grown with. And so from that perspective, it's great training, but then they also open up and expect that the crowd gives feedback, gives questions, keeps that dialogue going during their presentation. So it's a great event. You can see there we had a lot of other good presenters. Rusty Endicott had a mental health and awareness speech to finalize it on day two of that event. And we had 18 OPD5 personnel in attendance. As I look through the different jobs for the last month, I come across this video, and it was a shocking video to come across, no pun intended, but this is a month ago in the Mesquite area. a month to the day. So this was that end of the spectrum for our weather. And then here we are the last couple of weeks with the 95, 98 degree weather. I feel like I made the joke the other day, Melissa finally got her praying right, that she's getting these energy cells that she's been hoping for finally. We just swung back and forth. But Chris Felix took this video here. This is his duties. He's out checking on the contractors and making sure they're following the construction work plans, or sorry, the construction designs per plan. These are all contractors. This is hired by the developer, and he's just out doing his inspections and verifying that they've designed that, dug that deep enough, put our conduits in correctly, and he does a fantastic job. I appreciated that he took the video for the weather, but also shows a little bit of what he does that day. More projects that Mesquite has been working on. This is the large project they've been doing. This is at Painted Hills Substation, which we're upgrading right now. I'm sure Kevin will speak on it more later, but the line team in Mesquite did all the underground work, conduit, pulling wire, and have completed their portion of that. This showing, you know, if you could see into that, as much, all the work they've done there on the left, getting it completed up. Overton's been doing various pole changes. The reclosure pole is in the center there, which I spoke on last month. That's the one going up the mesa. They've completed that. On the left, that's down at Magnesite, which Rich will be aware of. That's the Magnesite tap. They did a overhead to underground portion through there. Really upgraded that area. The far right is also part of that reclosure install, just kind of how they decided to de-energize that and all the work that went into that. So the crews have been busy. It's been a great month. Any questions or comments?
Did you have AI put that contrail through that center picture?
No.
It's pretty cool.
Come on.
That's all right. Exactly why I really enjoy going to the Nevada Lowell Electrics. It's that very thing, because each co-op talks about how they do things and what they learn from them. It's just so interesting to me for the very same reason.
We've built a lot of relationships over the years that I call on periodically through the year, just because I know them and have learned from them.
Before I turn it over to engineering, I spent some time this morning with some of the leadership from Nevada, and I asked, how did best practices go? And the report that I received was that OPD5 has quickly risen to show we are a leader in our state. After that conference.
Wow.
So I think that is an incredible compliment for me to receive, and I want to say thank you to Kyle for leading that out. He was not excited that he was voluntold to be the MC for that event, but I'm told that he and all of our staff did an absolutely incredible job. So kudos.
Thank you. You know, one of the things that that brings up is that we used to use the bigger association, but very little of it is related to us in Nevada here, and by having our own association have these kind of things, it's much more relatable to our employees. They can participate, put in, and get out a lot more than the national association, because going to those things, it's just not even related to what our business is here. So I think that's
except
great.
For the equipment show.
Yeah, no, that's good.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. Except you can't hardly get around at all.
Not in that day.
All right, thank you. All right, let's do Randall with engineering, please.
All right, thank you. This is structure 60 on the 138 line. The contractor is moving back toward us now. We anticipate construction being completed sometime mid-May at this time. So the schedule's been pushed back a little bit. The digging's going well. They're doing all the, they've put in all the rest of the foundation structures are in, and we have all the materials available. The WEC update, we've submitted several standards through the WEC portal. The important portion of this was the implementation plan, us telling them how we were going to proceed with all of the standards and the requirements. We did submit that as requested, but they haven't made any comments to us yet. We submitted that at the beginning of this month, and we await their comments to see if they approve it. In that implementation plan, we also asked for an extension through the end of this year to complete all the requirements, and we'll see if they accept that. One of the big things that we've learned as attending WEC conferences and seminars is internal controls. And they said how important showing that you're doing the internal controls on this compliance. And so we're working very hard on making sure that we have the controls to make sure that we're doing all of the compliance that we say that we're going to complete. And so that's some of the things that are taking a little bit longer because we haven't, worked on that a lot. So that's something that we're spending more time on, making sure that we have the follow-up, the backup, and the reminders to follow up on the standards. Here is a graph showing that where we're at in comparison to all of the standards and requirements. After this month, we have 7 standards and 24 requirements that we will be submitting to the WEC portal this month, and that'll put us over 50% of our compliance that's been completed. Now, the important factor to realize is they haven't reviewed anything yet. Tell us how we're doing. And so that'll be something to see in the future.
But our Arizona folks are looking over everything.
Arizona folks have been very helpful in reviewing and giving us the suggestions that we need to keep us going in the right direction. Yes. And any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Randall. I will do Kevin with substations.
Okay.
So an update on Payne Hills Bay 4. The sub's making a lot of progress. We're really doing a lot of work there. This week the substation crew's been testing and adjusting the switches. They wanted to test everything in that whole bay before we energized, and they've been working on these V switches you see up there. They'll take and run a ductor test through it. If it doesn't do what they want, they'll open it up, they'll clean it, they'll adjust it and retime it and close it back in. So they've got those working pretty good, and they're going to work their way down through the rest of the substation, get the transformer and regulators. Everything's going to get tested out before it energizes. The line crew is pretty much done. They have one big part. When they re-energize, they've got to hook the jumpers back up to energize that section on the 69 side. And then I think they've got a couple little small things left to do, but not much. We're still expected to be online before summer loads, which is the end of May, and we're still on time and within budget. So we're going to keep shoveling forward. This is the low voltage conduit, and there's a junction box. You see that termination cabinet? That's where all of the conduit or conductors for the low voltage controls are going to come into that big junction box. And then this is on the inside. They're not quite done. The picture on the left with the relays on the left, they're pretty much wired, but then there's meters up above. You can see the wires hanging down. That's for the meters, but they're almost done with the wiring on the inside. The picture on the right, the relay is clear to the very right side of that picture. That came out of the old Mesquite sub, which is now going to be the Arrowhead sub. And so all that equipment came out of that building, went right up into here, and they're rewiring it and putting everything in. So they're ready to start pulling that low voltage cabling for that controls into that junction box and start terminating everything. So once they get that done, they'll do function testing and the tests on the relays to make sure everything works right, and then it'll be time to energize. So we're getting closer on that sub. And that's exciting because that's an important one to get done before summer. Long Drive and Raptor, we're in the testing and commissioning stages of both of these substations. They estimate it's going to take about 4 weeks to get that done because The Raptor sub on the right is not that bad, not that complicated, but the long drive sub on the left has got a lot of stuff involved in that one. There's two lines coming in, two lines coming out, and two substations fed off of that, and it's just it's a lot of work. So fiber optic network is done. It's all been spliced, and we've gone to a patch panel style instead of having to open up our fibers, resplice when we go to do new terminations. We all go to a patch panel and just patch it through. So we've updated that to make everything a lot better. The cutover when we go to energize these substations is going to take quite a bit because there's a lot of moving parts. There's, like I say, we've got two lines coming in, two lines going out, and then two substations, and we've got to keep everything online while we're doing all of that. So there's a lot of work to do that, but we're expected to energize that also by sometime then, end of May. Hopefully. Fingers crossed. Arrowhead substation. Our second transformer is coming for our Arrowhead substation. The control building is in the final design stage, and we'll go into production in May. We will start doing the underground dirt work Q3 of 2026, and I will not update you for that substation until then. So you won't hear about it for another couple months. The Tortoise substation, testing and commission is complete. We had a set of instrument transformers, CTs on top of a breaker is what they were, but they didn't pass. Manufacturer, we contacted the manufacturer of that breaker, and they are going to send a representative out to see why they didn't pass and hopefully get that investigated and replaced. It's still under warranty, so it'll be on their dime if they find something wrong with them. Anyway, because of the design of that ring bus, we can energize this, and I think they're planning on doing that next week to energize that 69 bay that's de-energized currently, and then feed Lincoln County out of their normal feed. So because of that ring bus, we're able to do that and still keep that breaker out of service while we do it. Mm-hmm. Any questions? Okay.
You going to have everything going for summer?
Oh my gosh, there's a lot of work to do before summer comes.
See, that to me, the summer looks here.
Summer came last week.
Yeah, summer's already here. The thing to look at is our overnight highs. If the overnight highs are below, well, somewhere around 80 and below, we don't hit those high spikes. We seem to cool off We seem to cool off at night, and then it keeps those peaks from spiking.
Thank you.
Okay, Scott with admin, please.
All right, this is the quarterly report, so we'll dive into a few different topics here. Cybersecurity training, we are at 89% for January, 93% for February. Stephen and I have talked about how are we going to get that last 7% to do the cyber training. We don't have any good ideas right now, but we are going to make it happen. We want that at 100% across the board. The cybersecurity lessons, trusted insiders can be the biggest risk. Social influence can bypass technical security. And strong oversight and accountability are essential. Mm. The training is really good, so we got to somehow push to that last two or three employees that just aren't taking advantage of it.
How did they do it? How is it given? Is it online or something?
It's all online, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's really no excuse not to hit that 100% mark. And it seems to be paying off across the board. We're seeing zeros. January, February, nobody's clicking on our phishing emails. And maybe they're not clicking on any attachments at all, but it's definitely working. We like it. We're seeing our email volume go down, but we're seeing our spam email go up. Firewall blocks by country. Bulgaria takes number one.
I don't see Iran in there.
I know we have been looking. We thought we would see that too, but we have not. Our server system uptime remains at 100% across the board. We're really happy about that. Our data backup and restoration is being done and tested 100% across the board for the month of February. Our EISAC emails, we saw 87 emails come through, and I will say that as part of WET compliance, I think Richard asked me if we participate, if we send them information, We will be doing that as part of WEC compliance. We will be sending anything about our cyber and physical incidents that happen at OPD into the EISAT. So I asked AI, what are the top three security threat patterns? Cyber attacks are on critical systems are increasing. Employees remain a primary target. Physical threats to infrastructure continue. Let's get into customer service. New automatic bill pays. We have 26 in January, 54 in February. And that gives us a total of 10,745, or 57% of our customer base. So that is just, it's beating our growth. So it continues to move in a positive direction. New customers on e-bill, 84 in January, 81 in February. And that's 7,042. Or 37% of our customer base. Number of calls, took 902 calls in January, 855 in February. The average on-hold wait time was 9 seconds and 8 seconds, so we're hitting that 8 second mark of customers being on hold. And then the average talk time has been very consistent, just a little above 2.5 minutes per customer. Total walk-in customers, 1,905 in January, 1,852 in February. And this is where it kind of gets interesting. Social media. This is our new Instagram followers for the month of February. And I think these numbers are going to skew it the rest of the year. Because we had a post to go viral. So we're going to see that big red candle. I don't know what it's going to look like the rest of the year. But we had 546 new Instagram followers in the month of February alone.
Mm-hmm. Who did the dance?
That's what I wanted to know.
I'll show you. So okay. Followers and reach. We had the reach was 256,000. So anybody that saw our post, if it was shared or on their feed or whatever, 256,000 on Instagram. And this was the post. This was Mike Abbott rappelling out of a bucket truck. And that post went viral.
It's not the one where I'm
so I just did a quick copy of it, but it's a video. It's a video for you to go look at. And I guess it was shared. It went crazy. So a number of Facebook posts, 19 Facebook posts in January, 33 in February. New Facebook followers also went up. We got 40 new Facebook followers in February, only 2 in January. And then the reach again went crazy on Facebook, 72,000. Anyone who saw the post on their feed, 72,000. And that gives us a total of 4,517 Facebook followers. And then just some website analytics here. We saw a total views of 8,645 people on our website.
Over what period of time total view?
That's for the month of...
It's just a monthly?
I forgot to change that number, but that's the month of February.
Okay. Yep. 8,000 in February.
Yep. That concludes my presentation.
Wow.
Thank you, Scott.
Nice job.
Okay, let's talk to the birthday boy about our finances.
All right. Lisa figured she would give me the best birthday present, the proposed moving the board day to my birthday.
Yeah.
Here we are. Well, we've been busy for the last, really 5 months, but more so the last 2 months in the finance department with our financial audit. We've been working with Hafen and Buckner and their agendas here. Going to present the audit report here in a few minutes, but our finance team's been doing a great job with that, and that's what's been keeping us busy. We're also, we mentioned this before, but we're also sad we lost a team member this last month, Mary Ann, and who was our work order clerk. She got married and she is moving out of our service territory, so she's been gone almost the entire month of March, but we have brought in Heather Wells from the customer service department, and she's catching on and keeping up with the demand right now, so we're super excited to have her. So those are a couple of things that are, two main things that have been going on in our department. So to begin with our financial report, we'll begin with our statement of operations. So on line one, column B, this is our monthly operating revenues. We reported $4.7 million. Our line three cost of purchase power was $2.5 million. Brings our line 20 total cost of less electric service of $3.8 million. We had on line 22 our interest received on investments $25,000. And then our line 29 margins were $921,000. So our budget for February was actually $770,000. And we're slightly above the budget for around $150,000. Part of that was due to we had some increased costs in January that got captured in January instead of February, and so it was a timing issue for that. Also, part of that we were anticipating paying more interest expense at this time because when the timing of our loans, and so we're paying less interest expense. And also the other thing was that there were less, as Cal pointed out, there were less unplanned outages, and so our labor costs, payroll costs were down a little bit. So those were the three main things that contributed to our increase over our projections. Also want to point out that if you look there in column B, our year-to-date margins, $803,000, and our year-to-date budget, $722,000, so we're almost $100,000 above that. So last month in January, we reported for the year, we're reporting, our budget is around $7 million is what we're anticipating in margins. And with that, there's still gonna be months that we have losses. January was one that was planned to have a loss. It was around $50,000. We reported last month it was around $170,000, but the majority of that was due to the new customers that we received, and we're still trying to true up the actual cost of that customer with our purchase power agreement of how much power was actually bought and sold to them. So that hasn't been finalized yet, but it's looking very favorable that we're in agreement of what was actually purchased and sold when before there was quite a bit of a discrepancy around $80,000.
So can I give an update on that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Don't want to interrupt you, but so the two new customers that we're discussing are the station power customers that we have out located on the reservation. Those are metered through an NV Energy meter. They also gave that same meter was given access to Tenasca because they are scheduling that on 15-minute intervals. And so at month end, NV Energy sends us a month end meter read. There was a discrepancy between the two. And so we're working with Tenasca and NV Energy to tighten up that meter read and ensure that we have it right. Tenasca and OPD5 feel that we have those correct numbers. They were just waiting for confirmation from NV Energy. When we did correct that, that was $80,000 in our favor. So it's just working out those intricacies of unique meter reads for those first couple of months.
And we'll report that. Well, most likely we'll know next month. So we're excited to be ahead of the curve for this year, and things are looking very positive. Our sales actually are still low from what we projected. We're about 5 million kWh low between January and February of this year, but we feel, and well, we've observed that where our rates are, it's pretty much right in line of where the cost of power is. So it's not that there's going to be a big gap. If our sales are down, then our cost of power is going to go down equally. So you may have any questions about our statement of operations. OK. Okay, so balance sheet. We'll begin on line five. On the asset side, we close with a net utility plant value of $167 million, and we have our investments in associated organizations on line eight, or line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, line 23 inventory, line 29 total assets. We close with a value of $194,548,000. And then on the liability and equity side, or line 36, total equity, $133 million. Our long-term debt, line 43, $47 million. Accounts payable, line 48. And then, again, our line 57, total liabilities and equities of $194
million. How much cash do we have to pay the bills? So I see, when I'm looking at line 22 and all those, it's very difficult to pick out. Some of it's supplies on hand, and some of it is temporary investments, and so I see cash. I can read that very clearly.
Yeah, so line 15, that's a good question. So line 15 and line 18 is the combination of where our cash is. So if you
15
have
and
18, eight, so 3.6 million and
plus 7 million.
Million.
Okay, so around 10 million where we are. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Question on the materials on that, we're about 5.2 million in inventory. When we complete the construction, what do you anticipate our inventory levels will be? Is that
back in your day, Rich? Do you remember what we kept inventory at?
Oh, about a million.
Yep, 1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
That then grew because we expanded to ensure that we had 1 mile of overhead underground materials on hand at any time, but then also the costs have increased so greatly. I think that we will see that go back down about $1 million, but I think we'll stay at about 4 million in our inventory now.
Mm, okay.
Longer lead items for some of the materials, we increase that to compensate for that also.
So that's just additional items just for outages or?
Yes,
some
if we were to have a mile of distribution line go down, we want to ensure that we have the poles, wires, insulators, anything we would need that we could get out there and get 1 mile put back up.
Mm-hmm. What kind of occurrence in life would knock out a mile of line?
A microburst. We had, do you remember the one down at the Echo, or down towards the lake? What?
Yeah, we had that one, and more recently we had the one up on right out of Whipple substation up on Hire.
Had that, Mesa.
Yeah, it knocked down what, 5 or 6 poles?
7 poles.
So yeah, that one storm. So,
and then we had the one going right up by the on your way to the airport in Mesquite that took down what, 4?
Yeah,
4 poles.
Uh-huh.
So it does happen.
It does happen.
It does happen.
Happens enough that we feel like we should be prepared. Now it doesn't happen enough that we need to fret every year that it's going to happen,
yeah.
But we're going to stay prepared for it.
Yeah.
But people would be very angry if we said we lost 7 poles, and if you could give us 6 to 12 weeks to get those poles in stock so we can get them put back up. We want to ensure that we have all of the equipment available when we need it.
Well, really, they'd be upset.
And I'll say, not just with me, but with you as well. So.
Okay, our modified debt service coverage with estimates through the end of the year, right above our goal of 1.87. Times interturn ratio, we had equity as a percentage of assets, 68%. And then our times interturn ratio had a little bit last month. Our ratio was a little off, and I apologize about that, but 4.13 is where we were, where it should have been reported as a 4.28, so right above our goal for this month. And then also, Mr. Young, this is a little bit, this is basically the detail of where our cash is. They're in the middle of the month ending balance of 4.3 million. Those are mostly, that's, you can see the institutions that we have those in. That's our ending cash, and then our Morton accounts, the 6.4 million there in the large towards the end, and then Goldman Sachs at 4,320.
can't necessarily get it right away, right? Some of it is more longer term.
Actually, we can get it. We can get it fairly quickly.
Okay,
this right here, the type and duration, they're actually in CDs, the majority of them, as the graph here shows. And the only things that we'll forfeit some of those interests if we get them. So
for the Goldman, we can have that as long as we make that request by 11 a.m. We can have it by 2 p.m. the same day. And for Morton, we can have that within 24 hours.
Okay. And this is the detail of all the accounts that we have in the Morton, that 6.3 million. And they're all spread out in CDs right now, and they're all within FDIC limits. So they're all insured. Total customers, this is the net number, 19,269 in February, an increase of 38 from the prior month. Connection fees, we had a total of 22, valued at 22,000. So this is consistent for the same period a year ago. So our January is a little lower last year, but February is a little higher, but pretty consistent as what we were a year ago. And also with our billing arrangements, this was actually consistent with where we were a year ago. So we're 52 total residential customers at just under $9,000, and then we have five commercial customers at $558. And our roundup program values there, 447 and 245. And then we have our next quarterly payment with CFC due. It's due on March 31st at right around 1.5 million. That's scheduled to be made on time and paid in full. Down there at the bottom shows the two additional loans that we advanced in November, December. And we actually advanced another $3 million in March, which will reflect next month. But tell you now, it was a 25-year term, and it was at a 3-year repricing for 5.21%.
So we just took out another loan, you think?
Yeah.
That's the second one, right?
No, that was the third. So there's these two here. So we did an additional three. It's not on here.
It's in March. It's in March.
Yeah. So it's the beginning of March. So we'll report that then. But with the discounts, it's 4.83. It was a 3-year repricing to.
And is it? What was the interest rate?
5.21. So it's slightly
so it's
higher.
Over, but we see it 5.15.
Yeah.
So it was a little higher.
It was more than that. Yeah. And it, yeah. Hmm. So with the discounts, it was 4.83.
Mm-hmm.
So they've gone up slightly since our last part.
So is it discounted more than the 2 million one?
It's the same.
Well, it was 5.19 instead of 5.8 or whatever.
Yeah, 4.81, so this one's at 4.83.
And how much was this, the set interest rate on the deal?
The new one, 5.21.
Oh, so I heard that. Thanks.
Considering there's going to be a change in the Fed in May with the leadership, are we going to be able to hold out till after that to take borrow any more money? Do you think? What's the situation?
No, we were planning this quarter. We were actually planning from last year. We were planning to borrow 9 last year and 9 by this first quarter.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if we'll do all of that, but we're still need to borrow for this quarter.
In this quarter?
Yeah.
By March 31st?
Okay, well, not this quarter, but in April, before May. I guess it wouldn't be this quarter, it'd be the second quarter. But
we're going to drag it out as long as we can, though.
But yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and as we've tried to go, like Melissa said, it's not that we've done this project, you know, like the $17 million project, and I'm like, oh, we're taking a loan for $17 million. We've been going as long as we can before we have to borrow any of those funds. So here's our revenues and KWH by customer class. And if you notice down at the bottom, we started including this. This actually wasn't included in your packet that went out, but we've included it since. So down at the bottom are the station power customers that we have there. And those, we try to break it down to show, you can see the KWH, 2.5 million KWH for January and 2.3 for February. And those are the revenues for those two. And we're trying to keep those separate on the next slide for our average costs and revenues down there at the bottom, so it doesn't skew, because the larger one is on its own contract and has a different rate, and so it's affecting it would affect our monthly cost for KWU. So we're trying to keep those separated out of there, so that's a true number of what our normal customers are paying. And these numbers, the January numbers, have been edited, well, updated since last month, but it was quite a bit higher for our cost, and it's still going to continue to go down, because that cost of purchase power in line 17 is still fairly high, because it hasn't been adjusted for the reconciliation with the NASCA. So we're at monthly cost, we're at 7.76 cents per KWH, revenue 12.77 cents, and our 2025 average cost is 8.12 cents. And that concludes my presentation, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you, Jonathan. We have a couple of things that are good news that I want to get to share with you. We had three of our employees that have been in our apprentice program that went and tested. We have Jared, Alonzo, and Layton. Layton tested out of his second year and passed successfully, so now he is a third year apprentice. Alonzo in our substation department tested and passed his first year test. That's always a big one to get through, and so he is now working on his second year. And then we have Jared, who is also from our substation department, and he tested out of his fourth year successfully and is now a journeyman. So
very good.
Yes, we're very, very proud of them. Okay. Since I saw you last, I've attended a few meetings. Today I went with NREA, and we testified at the Joint Interim Standing Committee on Natural Resources and Growth and Infrastructure, and we had a discussion on data centers. This was an interesting day, I'll say that. In the Las Vegas office was Lisa, our executive director, myself, Dane from Lincoln County, and Robbie from Valley, and then Kevin and Thad from Northern Nevada were in the Carson City office with our lobbyist, Jesse, to present there. So some of the things that this is some of the things that we discussed with the legislators on what do we see as challenges and opportunities with data centers coming to our service territories. Supply chain issues, manufacturing, permitting, workforce shortage in the rurals, federal lands, grid stability, and power supply. I have to say, and I'm not just saying this because it was us, our presentation was really, really well received. We presented, there were a number of, Google was there. There were a number of environmental groups. And we were followed by the Sierra Club, but I did not get to listen to them because I needed to make it back for this meeting. We followed NV Energy. The NV Energy, it was an interesting, they did a very good presentation. They received two questions from the legislators, and then we spoke, and we received about 11 questions. They were very, very engaged with us, and so that was very good. Lisa is incredibly well-spoken and does just a phenomenal job, but each of us CEOs took a part, and I talked with them about the role that you as a board are taking in speaking with your constituents about how they feel and how these data centers and large loads would affect our local communities and how serious you take that. That was very well received. These are a couple of the slides that we shared that were the drivers of growth. And one of the things that I thought was very interesting was that industrial and manufacturing, that growth is anticipated to be 30 gigawatts. And if you look at data centers, that's anticipated to be 90 gigawatts, purely from data centers. And then on the right is the five-year national summer peak growth. And it just shows an incredible need for energy in our future.
Where is that?
National.
Gigawatts, what, or what area?
It's national.
National?
Yes. Mm-hmm. NV Energy, I didn't bring their slides in with me. I have them on my desk. They talk about the number of gigawatts that they anticipate adding. But after the meeting, I visited with their staff in the hall, and they, like us, feel that of all of the tire kickers that come through, about 25% will probably actually land in our state. They have started working towards, they're going to do their IRP this in 2026 for 2027, and they're anticipating a new data center tariff. One of the things that they're doing in conjunction with Google is that Google is paying for a geothermal project that will then help. So they will not feed their data center directly from the geothermal, but they will be putting the geothermal into the grid, and then they will also pay a premium to be able to use that green energy that's coming from that geothermal. So they've worked that out. Our main message to the legislators from NREA was that our boards in rural communities do an incredible job of collaborating and working together to problem solve. And so what we say is, if you've seen one co-op, you've seen one co-op, and each one of us is very individualized, and our board of trustees are responsible to the citizens that they represent. And so we make the decisions that are best for our local community, and we believe that we should be, locals should be in control of that decision making, not the legislator writing in those parameters that then we all have to fall within, because we're very different. And anything that would fit and meet NV Energy's needs would be wildly different than ours. They question us about that, and I threw Dane under the bus and made him speak, but I said, speak about the scale of growth that you're looking at. Dane's system peaks in the summer at about 18 megawatts. They have a data center that is looking at coming. They've looked at anywhere between 20 and 100 megawatts. And Dane reminded them that he has 20 employees. And so it's not just that his staff would have to increase. It's that he has 5,000 people in his entire county. And so the hiring pool is very shallow in his area. And the legislators were very keen on that. We had a very good back and forth discussion with them. So the next thing I have to tell you about, I started with the good stuff, and then we're going to get to the real stuff, and that is that our hydro contracts and the hydrology on the Colorado River is looking very dire. They do the 24-month study, and they do the updates. In the last 2 weeks, that those forecasts have been reduced by 26% because of the higher temps, and so much of the snowpack is evaporating off instead of running because the temps have heated up so much. And so the Bureau of Reclamation has talked about the what are the possibilities of us reaching elevation 1035, where we would be at Deadpool for 12 of the 17 turbines at Hoover. If you look in the middle of the slide, you can see that the Lake Mead percentage of trace below 1035 in 2027, there is a 73% chance that that is going to happen. On the far right is the traces below 1035 in 2027 by month. So there is a 53% chance that we will reach that point by July, and then it continues to go up. There's not a 100% chance that it is going to happen, but I'm telling you that we are going to reach Deadpool in 2027 for 12 of those 17 turbines. So what does that look like for Overton Power? If we lose those turbines, there are five that are still operating. When those five operate, there is still energy that is flowing. The difference is that we lose all ramping and all shaping, which is the most valuable part of our hydro, that we can ramp that down and up depending on the time of day, so that when solar is in full production, we ramp down our hydro. When solar's dropping off, we ramp our, and then we get to take advantage of that ramping ability. We lose that. Those five turbines are just running. So when I spoke with, I had a meeting with CRC yesterday. They anticipate that we would lose about 15% of our our Hoover. And I asked Jonathan to give me an update. We have 23% of our portfolio is coming from hydro, and 7% of that, 28% of that is our Hoover. And then, so that's 7% of our total portfolio. The other bad news, oops, that's not the bad news, sorry. Sorry, Lindsay. That's not the bad news. I jumped ahead. That's not bad news, sorry. The other piece of bad news with this is that if you look on the left, there is a possibility that Lake Powell could drop below 3,500. That then affects our CRISP contracts. And so now with CRISP, currently WAPA is obligated to replace. And so what they've been doing right now with the hydrology being down is that they're going out on the market and buying that. But they're buying that with the basin fund. The basin fund that we've paid into is meant for maintenance on those dams, not for buying replacement. So if they continue to lose hydrology and they used the basin fund to replace all of what they are obligated to, they would bankrupt the basin fund in 1 year. So the good news that I can add for this is that none of this includes any DROA, which is the drought contingency releases, and any of the agreement. There's no agreement between the upper basin and the lower basin on any of our water sharing or on the, I just forgot the word.
Conservation.
Conservation, thank you guys. There's no agreement there. So when CRC is looking at, they're saying, we have no rules for conservation for 2027. We know that there's still going to continue to be some conservation, at least on our end in 27, but there's no rules for it. So this is what it's looking at. Even with conservation, we will see that there is going to be a reduction in our hydro, at the very least Hoover, and likely in CRISP as well. Now, if the upper basin decides to do some conservation or release from some of their reservoirs to keep Powell propped up, then CRISP isn't as affected. And so that depends on those upper basins. The good news is that we talked about that there was the bill language that was approved for the Help Hoover Dam Act. That was the $50 million that they were going to have Bureau of Reclamation release for them to purchase the Whitehead turbines at Hoover Dam. That money has still not been released. But I was at the meeting today at the legislature with Eric from CRC, and he sent me a text and said that he had reached out to them, and they said they are working on it. So what that means with the Bureau of Rec, I'm not sure. But he did tell me that the Hoover Dam has already placed on order, and they're just waiting for the final yes to Whitehead turbines. If those two Whitehead, they've done a study to see how many do they need, and four is the max. Two, they get the most bang for their buck. So if they get those ordered and installed, that is a 3 to 5 year time frame before we see that. So we are going to have some lean hydro years for a minimum of three, likely five years, and unless hydrology changes. Now they are not going. They are not currently looking at putting in all four of those Whitehead turbines, because if hydrology does return, then you've put all of that money into Whitehead turbines that aren't needed. And so they're doing the two for now, and then they'll reassess and do those studies. I did ask them about the $80 million that they were applying for in IIJA grants to see how that's looking, and they said not good. So,
is there any seniority, like, of the people that get this fever water, is there a pecking order to that, or is it just across the board? Everybody that gets it's going to take that equal cut.
Yeah, everybody's going to get a cut. We all have a contract, and we're all going to lose a percentage of our contract. Now, some people have a larger percentage than others. And so, yes. Yeah. Our neighboring utility, you know, there was a long time that Overton was served 100% hydro from all of our contracts. We have then, hydrology has changed, and we've outgrown those contracts. So we're, again, 23% of our portfolio comes from that. 70% comes from the market. Our neighbors to the north are the opposite. 70% comes from hydro and 20% comes from the market. They are looking at that flip-flopping in 1 year.
Who's the neighbor?
Lincoln.
Lincoln.
Huh?
Lincoln.
Lincoln.
Yep. Okay. Now, this is good news. We had our candidate filings were due on March 13th, and so I wanted to go over who those current filings were. Each of these seats were filed for uncontested. So in Overton, Richard Jones filed. For Mesquite, Dale Rust filed. Our Logandale seat, Lindsay Daly filed. And in Bunkerville was Michael Levitt. Each of those will be uncontested, and so we will see those take effect in January of 2027.
Mr. Lindsay Daly is here with us today. If you haven't met him, he's going to be the man of the hour some of these days.
Man of the hour.
Yeah.
I attended the NRECA Power Exchange in Nashville. That was a good conference. It's 11,000 people at that conference, which is not necessarily overwhelming, but it's just they have to hold it in such large areas to fit that number of people. I did not wear a pedometer, but I can tell you that my feet still hurt from all of that walking, because then I followed that up with a trip to Disneyland with my kids, and so I feel like I should be on crutches. There were a number of good topics that I attended. I did a Leading Resilient Teams, Communicating Rates and Affordability in a Time of Change, Nuclear Energy and the Cooperative Future. That one, I'm going to be honest and say, was a bust. I had such high hopes that that would be a really good class. We sat there for about an hour and a half for them to tell us that nuclear is going to cost more than we anticipate it's going to cost, and it's going to take longer to do than we think it's going to do. That was the gist of the entire thing. And so there you go. I saved you guys an hour and a half out of your life. Leveraging the Strength of Every Generation was really interesting. Wisdom of Women in a Changing World. I had breakfast with our Fitch staff, which was really nice. I've worked with the Fitch ratings group for a number of years doing our ratings, but I've never met them in person. And so they saw that I was on the attendee list and reached out. So that was nice to be able to put a face with the voices that I've talked to over the years. I also was asked to do an interview with Meridian, who is our accounting software. They have done about 7 of those with CEOs across the nation, and so they asked me to sit down and do that, and when that comes out, I'll share that with you guys. That was interesting to do. I've never done something like that, and I hope I did us proud. I asked her to shave some years and pounds off of me with the camera, and then to make me sound smart if they could edit any of my responses. So we'll see how they did. I also voted on behalf of NREA as Lisa was called back to Nevada early, and Dale voted on our behalf for OPD5. Our IIJA grant has now been fully funded. I've had 3 meetings that Vernon and I and then various different staff have attended. It is very exciting when they tell you that they give you a grant. You know, there's the big paper check and you're like, yes, we got $1 million. Boy, that is not free money. There is so much work leading up to getting the grant, to applying. I think that we had probably 6 different submissions where you tweak this, change that. Now they want this. We got all of that submitted, and then it took a couple more submissions before GOE actually approved it. It is now fully approved. So we've had multiple meetings on reporting requirements, contracts, bidding and procuring requirements, reimbursement requirements. There is so much, there are so many T's to cross and I's to dot on when you can get reimbursed for funds. One of the things that I was unaware of is that every single month you have to give them a report of what it is that you've done, even if you've done nothing. So we're thankful for it. We're learning through that process. It is not as easy as I thought it was going to be, but it will be a worthwhile project. And we are going to start working on the engineering of that in the first of next year. It may be start at the very end of this year, early 2027, with hopes that we can get that project completed in 2028.
Is that wonderful?
Yes. Yes. Okay. That concludes my report, Mr. Chair.
Oh, outstanding. Oh, that was record time. I hope it's not all. I hope that's not all leading up to Hafen, Buckner, Everett, McGrath, and taking all that much time.
I think Jonathan did most of my report for me,
so I can do the...
You
want to...
Oh,
sure.
Do you want to trust me with that? Why do I work it?
You can't
do any
worse than those guys.
So. We'll see.
Okay.
Jonathan,
introduce
her.
Okay. This is Jenna from Hafen Buckner. She's been with us. She was here last year also. We've worked with her, Kevin, Malcolm. We're here on site. We, like I said, our accounting team, our finance department has been working a lot last month. We've got some of them here, Shauna and Kim, representing the accounts payable and accounting deal department. But we're super glad that Jen is able to make it and present our audit report. We've been working a lot with her. They've been great to work with. And she can introduce herself some more.
Says it all. I am Jenna. I was one of the 3 auditors that worked on your report this year. The audit report is for December 31st, 2025 and 2024. So it is a comparative report, but I'm not really going to focus on 2024. And then I'm going to kind of make this quick and painless for you guys. Sounds like you guys go over your financials every month. You're very aware of them. So I'm just going to hit the key points. So the first thing I want to go over is the independent auditor's report. So what this basically sums up is what we do as auditors. So overall what we do is we make an opinion of the financial statements, and we want to make sure that they're presented fairly in all material respects and financial positions of Overton Power District Number 5. So how do we determine that opinion? We conduct our audits in accordance with the auditing standards of the generally accepted in the United States of America. And then we also want to talk about what's the responsibilities of the auditors, what's the responsibilities of management. So the responsibilities of management is they're responsible for the preparation of the financial statements in accordance with the accounting principles. And then the auditor's responsibilities are we're to obtain the reasonable assurance about whether financial statements as a whole are free from material misstatement, whether due to fraud or error, and to issue an auditor's report to include our opinions. So on the next page, so this is kind of what we do. In performing an audit, what we do overall is exercise professional judgment, identify and assess the risks, obtain an understanding of internal controls, evaluate the appropriateness of accounting policies, and then we take all of that and we make a conclusion. So all in all those words are basically to tell you what we do as auditors. I'm just actually going to hop ahead to the actual financial statement. So the statement of net position, also known as your balance sheet. Your total assets and deferred outflows and resources for 2025 was $198 million, with $163 million of that in your net utility plant. Liabilities was also the $198 million, and then if you'll see the large portion of that is the net investment capital assets of $163 million. But that's where a good portion of the balance sheet is in that net utility. And if I'm going too fast for you, if you have any questions, please stop.
You're doing great.
Okay. I feel like you guys go over this every month, so you know the ins and outs. So the statements of revenues, expenses, and change in net position. Operating revenues for 2025 was $55.9 million. And a good portion of those your operating expenses were $50.5 million. With 35.7 being in purchase power. No surprise there. Your other non-operating expenses were minimal, so I'm not really gonna touch on any of those, but the change in net position was a positive $4.7 million. So at the end of the year, the net position was $125.9 million. So you had overall a positive in net position, which is a good thing. Your statement of cash flows. So this is actually the inflows and outflows of cash. You kind of want to see the breakdowns of those. Cash from operating activities. We already kind of touched on this. You can see the cash received from customers was at $55.8 million. The cash flows from investing activities was a negative $4.8 million. And $25.9 million of that was to additions to the utility plant. Cash flows from financing activities was a negative of $1.1 million, and a majority of that was $1.6 million in interest paid. So at the end of the year, which I know you asked about this earlier, what was your cash and cash equivalents at the end of the year? Was $5.8 million. But that was the end of 2025, so it looks like there's been some changes since then. On the notes, I'm not going to go over a ton of these. These ones right here talk about Overton as a whole, what it is, the accounting policies that you guys use. Very welcome to read over that, but you guys probably are very familiar with that more than I am. The section I do want to just hop onto, because it is such a large portion, is utility plant. You can see there a breakdown on that table towards the bottom, the balance at 2024, the additions, deletions, and then your balance there at $163 million at the end of the year, just if you want to see more of a breakdown of the changes. And then skipping over to long-term debt, which you kind of already touched on in the financial report. Again, I just wanted to touch on the balance at the end of 2024 and the balance at 2025 and the changes throughout the year. There was additions of $5 million, which Jonathan discussed in his portion, and then there was retirement team that you paid him off of $4.1 million. If you go to the next page, this just really breaks down every single loan, what the rates are, when they're to be paid off, all of that, if you wanted that. I'm going to skip ahead. I know there's always a question on pensions, so we are just going to dive into it. So pension liability for the district recorded a liability of $11.2 million. So Lisa, do you want to help me explain that? So that doesn't mean you guys are liable for that $11.2 million. That's the figures that Nevada Pension provides to us. You guys are required to put that liability on your financial statements, but that doesn't mean that the likelihood of you ever paying out $11.2 million is very minimal. But I just wanted to go over that because it does look very alarming when we see 11.2 million.
Does everybody feel okay with that, or should we talk about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question here. We do have to pay that ultimately, right?
You're paying.
If the state becomes defunct, the PERS is unfunded, and we are required to record our portion of the underfunding. Yes. So they hire actuaries to come in and say they believe that I'm going to make this much at the end of my career and how much and how long I'm going to live, and then that's how they calculate that.
But that only comes into effect if the state of Nevada declares bank or their pension system declares
correct.
Bank.
Yes.
Yeah. So the likelihood of that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
But it is alarming to see $11.2 million liability. Sure. So I just wanted to go over that. But again, likelihood of that realizing itself is minimal. The only other thing I want to go on is the new accounting pronouncement, because we always do go over them, but Overton is actually not necessarily impacted by it. It's GASB 101. What GASB 101 requires is that, and he's like, they record compensated absences, your PTO, your vacation time, all of that, as well as the taxes that they will be held liable. So if I have 40 hours of PTO every year, my employer needs to have 40 hours of my hourly pay or my salary and the taxes that they might pay to the government for me to work. The thing about Overton is that you guys already accounted for PTO and vacation, so it wasn't a change to you, and then you guys aren't subject to FICA because of the pension. So it actually doesn't impact you, but we are required to put that there was a new accounting pronouncement in the year. And last and least, I'm going to hop over to the auditor's independent report, because at the end of the day, that's probably what you guys care about the most. What did we find? So during the audit, we did not identify any deficiencies in internal flow controls that we consider to be material weaknesses. All in all, we had no findings, no negatives, nothing that we found alarming. And I don't believe it's probably on this. It's not. In your packets, if you have it there on the very, there's a loose paper there. This is just our letter proposing to our governor. This just says that we had no issues with management, you guys did a great job, basically that we were happy with the audit. They make my life easier. We obviously gave them lots of work and kept them busy these past 2 months, so kept them on their toes. But what questions do you guys have?
Would you tell us a little bit about what kinds of things you check? Are you just going over what they give you, or do you see like bank statements? Do you compare those?
So,
do you do a physical audit?
A little bit of everything. So I'll tell you the sections that we go over. So we go cash. We look at cash. We look at bank statements. We also look at their bank reconciliations, making sure they're being reconciled in time, making sure the things that show on that reconciliation are not stale. You know, everything appears to be. You don't want to have checks that were written in 2020 still lingering on there and just stuff like that. We look at investments. We look at all investment statements, interest income, all of those things that we got from Morton, just forgot their name. We look at accounts receivable, accounts payable. We go through inventory. So we actually come here at the end of the year and do a count with Overton, do a physical count. We do a lot of poles, transformers, because those are the high-cost items, and we physically count them to make sure that what is stated on the financial statements is accurate. We also look at invoices to show what those cost. Again, so you have 10 poles, they cost this much. Does that match what the financial statements say? Let's see, what else do we look at? We look at expenditures. We want to make sure that we make a selection of, I think for you guys, we do about 50. We look at 50 random invoices with the selection process. We look at every single documentation with it from start to finish. So invoices, checks, was it approved? If it happens to be approved by the board, was it approved? Was there the proper signers on those checks? So we go through all of that process. Let's see. My goodness.
Is that work orders?
Yes, work orders. I'm like, everyone's a little different. So work orders, yeah, we dig through all work orders. And I don't work on that section as much. That is Kevin's brainchild. But we dig into work orders. extensively construction progress. Like, we dig into all of the projects that you guys have going on and are ongoing from year to year when those are completed, fixed assets. So we dig in, like, to everything. So I can't think of anything other topics we want to. But we dig into every single, basically every number that's on the financial statement, whether it be your balance sheet or your income statement, we dig into it. We verify every single number some way or another, whether it's a statement from a third party or digging into invoices to make sure that is reasonable and makes sense.
This is what Shauna and Kim's been doing for the last 8 months.
Yes. Yeah. Did you find my flush credits?
So.
Anywhere? No?
So we did a fiscal year end, so your credits were flushed. Maybe next year I will find some flush credits, but I did not. But no, we dig pretty deep, and that's our job as auditors, is to find anything. Not that we think anybody's doing anything fishy or sketchy, but we also just want to make sure there wasn't a human error. We're all human, we all make mistakes. We want to make sure that the financials that we're presenting, that you guys are presenting, are accurate. Is there any other areas of concern you want to know how we dig into? Or... Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Very good. Nice work. Mm-hmm.
I would think one nice thing I might sort of want to consider is maybe we should get this before the meeting so we can look it over if we have any questions. Because although she did a nice job, I mean, you know, we're looking at
that's a lot to digest.
Thousands of pieces of information here, and it might be worthwhile to send it out a week or so ahead to the board members before she comes in.
It was posted.
Then I could highlight if I had a question.
It was posted.
It came electronically. Yeah, I saw it.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
You got it.
Yeah, it came electronically.
Yeah, you got it a week or so ago.
It was posted last Thursday. So you want a paper copy of it? Is that?
Yes, right. I mean, obviously, electronic, you've all computer screens. I how many read it over and highlighted the area of one? You know, here we can jog here a page or something. It might be nice just to have something.
I saw it because I read it.
Important as this.
I read her comment.
Okay, noted.
Thank you.
You bet.
That's all.
Okay, this particular item, we're looking for a possible acceptance of this audit report.
I move we accept the audit report as presented. They're leaving before.
They make their splash, it's time to go to the bar.
Wait for me. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Wait for all of them.
I second the motion.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second.
Who seconded? Sorry.
Jeff.
Thank you.
Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Outstanding. Discussion on line loss.
Okay, this item is for discussion only. Last month, we had a presentation from CRC. And in the meeting, Chad expressed that he would like some more information. And then following the meeting, Mike asked that we put an agenda item on. And so I have asked staff to give you guys a presentation on this, and Randall will kick us off.
Thank you, Melissa. So engineering, substation, and line ops all have a part in mitigating line loss. And each of us are going to take a portion. It won't be long, maybe we have 25, 30, 40, 50 slides.
Yeah, so that should take long.
Anyway, I'm going to touch on these four. Just kidding. Maybe 20 slides.
It's incredible information.
It is. Okay. It is.
We'll watch closely.
I'm going to touch on these four quick items here. I'm going to review quickly the KTR ratio that we talked about. There's an NVE transmission agreement that I want you guys to be aware of that helps how it impacts our line loss, and also how bringing Escape PV on helped us. There are several studies that we do every 5 years as part of our construction work plan, and two of them have the most impact on our line loss, and I'm going to discuss those today, and also our transmission planning strategy as we go forward. So on that form at line 139, which is the ratio on line loss, he compared us basically to the whole group, which is, it's a good tool to use to compare us to everybody else. But I think when you're talking about line loss, I think it's important to compare us with those companies that have a similar setup that we have. Transmission, miles of transmission is where most of the line loss happens. And so comparing us with companies of that size, I think is more appropriate. So I reached out to some NVE, some Nevada companies that have 100 plus miles of transmission, and they reported back about an 8 to 10% line loss. I also reached out to one of our engineering firms, ECI, who deals and they do lots of studies for companies. And they shared their findings of companies with 100 plus miles of transmission that their line loss was in the 6 to 10% range. So I just wanted you guys to understand that. I think that sometimes ratios can be miskewed when we're talking about certain things.
How many miles of transmission line do we have?
We have 100.
Just 100?
100 miles, yeah.
What's our line loss?
Well, we're going to get to that. It was reported.
We're working up to it.
It was reported at 5.65, which was alarming because that's higher than the average of the all the co-ops, right?
Are you going to talk about how they calculate that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Come on, Rich. It's just like, come on, just be patient.
Everybody's excited.
But I miss the KRTAs, you guys.
So anyway, the simple calculation for the line loss is you take the purchases less the sales, and that's the loss, right?
Sure.
So on the NVE agreement that we have with them, we have an automatic 1.5% adder to our meter every month for whatever we purchase. So let's say we purchase 100 megawatts in a month. We automatically have to add 1.5 or 1.5 megawatts to that number, which increases that. Mm-hmm. So there's we start out the month with 1.5% loss.
Well, not exactly do we, because we get a certain amount at our meter. And we're not talking about getting it to us. We're talking about within our own system.
But it's coming through. Whatever comes through NVE to us, we have to meter.
Well, yeah, but that's NVE's line loss on the transmission line.
But that impacts the line loss ratio that we're talking about.
But it's calculated on the energy purchased. And so if our meter read comes in at Tortoise at a certain amount, we have an automatic, contractually obligated to change that meter read up 1.5%.
I thought we were talking about from Tortoise, what we get and what we sell.
No. No, we have to add that before we even get to that point.
It is a part of the Tortoise meter read, but that read that is part of our financial statements includes the 1.57%. That's what the KRTA calculates from is our financial statements.
Is that to make up for line loss before it gets there?
Yes. Exactly.
So in actuality, go ahead.
And we actually have, it's 112 miles of transmission.
Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate that.
You just cut into your time.
I'm sorry. I will try to be more accurate in the future. I'm sorry, Mr. Birthday Boy. You need some more time, spotlight time? Anyway, so we're reported at 5.56. So in actuality, less the adder, we're actually at 3.99% on the KTR ratio.
Okay, so for what we get at Tortoise, and what we sell is only 3.99 lower.
Exactly.
So we get 100, we sold 96%.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, in July of 2025, we brought the Escape PV generator online, which it decreased our line loss to 4.22% because we have less power that we're sending, energy we're sending to Mesquite, because it's coming from the PV. And so with the adder adjustment, that's down to 2.65%, and that for line loss. And so after it's all said and done, I think we'll be in the little over 3% for 2026 and going forward.
Do you look at individual segments too, like
that's coming up. That's part of it's part of our assessment. That
we're just so excited. Call him Rich.
They're trying to get through this quicker. We've actually met.
Slide.
How many times did we meet on this? We met several times to make sure we covered everything.
Okay,
we're so excited.
I see you guys are wanting to get the snacks. We're doing our best. We will hustle through this. Hey, I've gone through this a bunch of times today, Byron. I'm trying to get through this. Okay, so we have a bunch of, one of the work plans that we do is called the load flow study. And that's how it analyzes how electrical power moves through our system. And it has very varying elements within that study. And one of them is evaluate system losses. So every 5 years, we actually do studies that look at parts of our system that evaluate losses. Another one is the transmission planning study. And this is one of the important ones because it forecasts our future demand, talks about reliability, if we lost a transformer, if we would be able to recover from that. It identifies project. It talks about new transmission, new substations. And this is what we base capital projects on. There are studies that we do every 5 years. And this is on a 10-year planning horizon these studies are done on. We recognize that the significant portion of system losses occurs through transmission. And so we try to mitigate the transmission by increasing voltage. So the more higher voltage you transmit at, the less amount of line loss you have. For instance, on our new line, on the 138 line that we're building, we conducted at 1272, which is a lot larger conductor. So the amount of capacity that we have going through that now is going to have more room and more volume to get through. So there will be less heat generated as that energy is passing through the conductor. So we've increased it. Also, by increasing it, we've also set up the future to take 230 to Mesquite. The structures, the insulators, and the conductor are all built at a 230 standard. So if we got 230 in Mesquite, that even lessens the line loss because we're transmitting now at a 230 voltage other than a 138. And currently, we don't use our 69 line. That's sitting idle because we put everything on our 138 line. We send everything at 138 kV to Mesquite, and then we backfeed our 69 substations there to help line loss. We're sending over 138 kV instead of 69.
Is the 69, is that the little one under?
That's,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's the smaller line that's going out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Not the long line, the new line.
No, that's a distribution line. So up at Sand Hills, right, there's two lines. There's a taller one and a shorter one. The shorter one is a 69 that goes out.
Okay.
Improved power factor. We know that keeping our power factor, we're about 95% power factor. We know that keeping that power factor up in that range helps efficiency. Kevin's going to touch on a few projects that we're going to be doing to help that efficiency and power factor into the future. Maintaining equipment. We know that maintaining equipment is important for line loss. And Kyle's going to touch on what his crew does to address that.
Okay, so I'll give an overview of how we actively manage our system efficiency with the field staff. We're proactive in our work. We attack them before we have problems that show their face. It's easy. Every month I speak on outage mitigation, but quite honestly, that conversation is directly connected to system losses and efficiencies. A hot connection is an inefficient connection, and our team going out to fix outage mitigation, that comes up so much more often because that's what customers want to make sure we're on every day. So we speak on that every month on that. I've noted two different particular positions with my teams here that directly affect that, the system losses and how we mitigate that. On the left, we have the foremen that provide the oversight before, during, and after jobs. They verify that the construction work plan and the maintenance work plan of Overton Power Districts are followed. They set up and verify that the construction design, the teams are doing them, the terminations correctly, making sure everything that when they leave that job site, those are an efficient piece of equipment that we've then installed and is good for many of years. On the right, we have audits and inspections. We have one auditor that's assigned to that every day to go around and inspect our system that's been installed for all of our lives. That construction work plan sets up that rotation of when they should go through that system and how long we're on that rotation before they should go back through that and verify those pieces of equipment again. That one person has an infrared gun that they use. It's a fantastic tool. With technology nowadays, it's just this little handheld device, gives a great little picture, and they use that, you know, as well as a visual inspection to go through those and pinpoint outage mitigation, system losses, inefficiencies. All of that work creates data, which then generates the workload based on priority. That the data is created by those by my workforce. They'll categorize it as high priority, low priority, and then passes along to Randall's team, which then gets out the workload, the work orders, and then our team gets it corrected. Obviously, if it's a high priority, they're getting it done that day. They'll make that contact. This is the infrared gun on the right. This was back when we were dealing with the crown splices a little over a year ago. You can see that the white inside of that is hot. That shows that. And this just shows the how effective and easy that technology has made this for our lives. Drones with infrared, handheld devices like this make those issues visible and easily noted and then corrected.
Can that splice be improved?
Yes, and it has been since then. Okay. Yep. If they're noted like that, it's switching orders are created, which then take that out of service, and then it's replaced as soon as possible. I took a little snapshot from our measurables. This has been our auditor's measurables for the year to date. It shows what he's completed for his audits, and it gives you a little snapshot of how much work and effort he puts into day to day getting through that. He's done 574 system audits year to date, which one might take, 15 minutes minimum, but then others might take an hour because it takes him that much time to dig through the gravel that the landscaper has buried to find the secondary vault to then do the audit. He's noted 74 corrective actions this year. Many of those have been corrected. They're, like I said, range from low to high, and obviously the workload is dictated off that prioritization. And then 260 miles of lines patrolled. So we have a great process. It's all the data is captured, it's stored correctly, and then it's also filtered to all the staff members, like Randall's team, to mitigate to get that workload out prioritized.
Mm-hmm. Vegetation, I see they also look at that too for
absolutely
outside.
Yeah, Ben has got a lot of hats for me. I really appreciate him. He's our auditor, inspector, locator, but then through the WEC process, a lot more vegetation management has come up, and he is my go-to guy for that, getting that set up. So I do appreciate him.
I also wanted to note the substation crew also does infrareding each month when they do the substation inspections for preventative, but also anytime you see heat is losses in the system, so that they also do that same process. I'm going to talk about VARs. And I know you use VARs, volt amps reactants is what it is. But I'm gonna give you an analogy, so hopefully it helps. Okay, this is the Diet Pepsi analogy. I'm a Diet Pepsi drinker, so that's why I'm related to it. So the liquid Diet Pepsi, that's watts, right? The useful part, the refreshing part, that's the part that actually does the work. It's related to watts. Okay, VARs is the foam on top of that Diet Pepsi. It's good, you gotta have it, that way you know your soda's not flat, right? And when you drink it, it gives you a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a boost. But it doesn't do anything for you, it doesn't fill you up. You're paying for this much Pepsi, and if it's full of foam, you're only getting half of what you're paying for. So the other is volt amps, and it's the entire 44-ounce cup full of whatever, soda and foam, it's the entire cup. So I had AI create this for me, so you kind of get a visual of it. You've got the one on the left that's a good one, right? You can still see it's fizzy, and it's full to the top. You're getting your money's worth out of that. The one on the right, you got a lot of foam in there. You're only getting about 3/4 of what you're paying for. So that's about the same with VARs. So how does that relate? VARs are essential for energizing the system. They create the magnetic field that is needed for operation. VARs don't do any actual work, but they're necessary. So the problem is, the greater the amount of VARs, the foam, the less watts, liquid you have, forces the system to work harder to maintain the required voltage. So, like I said, if we want a 44-ounce soda, full of soda with very little fizz on it, and that's what we're trying to do with VAR mitigation. So to minimize system losses, VARs must be monitored and reduced. VARs, the foam, increases system inefficiencies, leading to greater losses. There's that picture again. So what is that? Well, what are some sources of VARs? So we've got line inductance. So if we have the line comes across, if we got another line that's too close to it, it'll pull a little bit off of that. Also, the line construction, how these arms are set up, how close they are to the conductors are close to the pole, that all creates resistance. Wire size, if the wire is too small, it creates resistance. This all adds up to VAR loss. How the transformers are created, how they're wound, the materials used. You know, you have inefficient transformers that create a lot more VARs, that pull a lot more VARs off the system. Then you've got large loads and poor power factor in those large loads. So if you have a motor that's running really inefficiently, or you have a motor that's too big for, you know, you've got a small pump and a huge motor running it, that's inefficient. You're gonna pull a lot of VARs. And then if you got a motor that stops and starts quite regularly, that is very inefficient too, and it can create the VAR loss. And then induction furnaces, they're just huge loads that are very inefficient. There's also variable frequency drives. You've got a plant that operates, you know, in different speeds. Those VFDs will create, you know, VARs. Computer equipment, switching power supplies in the computers creates VARs. Lighting ballasts, they create VARs. So there's a lot of sources for VARs.
Computers actually generate? I thought they don't. Yeah,
very small, but it is. It's a negative VAR. Yeah, it can. But you get a bunch of them, and it
like a data center, right?
Yeah. Yep. So, how do we mitigate it? One is for line design. So, you know, the engineering team, when they build a line, they collaborate with engineers, third-party engineers, to design that line so that it mitigates those losses. Capacitor banks is a large thing that we do to mitigate those VAR losses. And capacitor banks just introduce VAR flow into the system. You know, if you're lacking VARs, they throw VARs back on. So OPD, we can track those VAR flows right at our substation meters. We can see, you know, we've got, you know, 1,000 VARs flowing. We got 300 VARs in the wrong direction. We put a capacitor bank in and it corrects that. And so you hear power factor, leading lagging power factor. Cap banks correct that power factor, and that's VAR flow. So it doesn't matter whether you're going forward or backwards, it still needs to be corrected. And
why does it need to be corrected? I mean, actually, if it's out of phase slightly like that, the consumer has to buy more to get the same work done, right?
The consumer and the power district, both.
Why? Because we're supplying power to it.
We still are charged on the same. We're billed on megawatts the same way the customer's billed on megawatts. So if our power flow is, if our VARs are off, we still get penalized for it. We're paying for this much, and we're only getting, you know, the less efficient it is, the harder it is on our equipment, I should say.
Does a substation AC fit into that? Like, we don't get paid for that, but we got to have it.
Yeah, we actually have meters on our substations, and we record that.
We don't pay it, but
it's recorded.
Yeah. I had always heard that motors were the hugest, biggest creator, and transformers had built-in losses that couldn't do anything about it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Capacitor banks help fix that problem. So.
Or motors, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So capacitors.
Can't do anything for the transformer, though.
Yeah.
I thought the transformer losses were heat.
They are heat, but if you get them to where they're running more efficient by putting capacitor banks in front of them or behind them, you can correct that.
It takes the surging out?
Kind of, but yeah, it can act as a buffer. As a buffer. Okay, where was I at? Anyway, we put smart cap banks in our system now. We used to have old manuals. We'd have to go up and turn them on every summer when the loads were high, power factor starts going down. We throw them in and it energizes that capacitor bank and makes that bar flow in the right direction. Well, we've replaced those with switching ones that turn on and off when they're needed, so they're not going in the wrong direction because we've got too much of them.
Well, right there you have $1.5 million for a future deal. How much will that save us by correcting this problem? I mean, economically, is it going to save us more than $1.5 million?
Over the long term, yes. It's a good question. Okay. So there's more than just one problem with that. So we have what we have is we have low flow studies, or we have the. Let me get onto that. Let me get to that in a second. Okay. So we've had ECI conduct studies for our load flow, and they've given us several locations to put in cap banks, and we've followed their directions, and we started implementing those cap banks. Mm-hmm. And we've also been replacing the manual switching cap banks with automated ones. And they're relatively inexpensive, $30,000 to $60,000 each. The 2019 transmission study that was done suggested that we needed a large cap bank, 30 MFRs, in the transmission system. So what they based that study off of was not just losses and inefficiencies. That's our voltage. That keeps our voltage where it needs to be. So the cap bank, yes, it does help our inefficiencies, but the cap bank in the long term kept our voltage where it needed to be. And they did that study on an N-1 situation where they said if one of the transformers at Tortoise went down, we would have to feed our system off our 69 line, and we would need that cap bank to keep the voltage up in Mesquite. And so that was one of the big drivers behind that cap bank.
That's what that was for, yeah.
Yeah, it's to keep the voltage where it needed to be. Mm-hmm. And that's why, that's one of the big reasons we needed that cap bank. It also keeps our VAR flow in the right direction and minimizes
losses. That's changed
now,
though, with the solar coming in. And because it's coming in at a different location, it's not at the far end of our system.
Yes, it does, but you can't rely on that. The sun goes behind a cloud, you get a good stormy, cloudy day, the solar drops off, you've still got to supply that power out to that end of the system. You can't completely rely on that to take up your losses. You still have to maintain that voltage. So.
And the solar provides no VARs on the system, as I understand.
They stiffen our voltage at that end, mm-hmm. is what they do. So. Okay. There's other ways of mitigating VARs with SATCOMs, and that's if you've got like solar farm, wind farm, that's a very fast switching, basically cap bank, switches on and off very quickly. Pretty expensive. And then the other one is a static VAR compensator, which you use for these big industrial loads, big motors, that kind of stuff. Another thing they asked me to talk about is unbalanced loads. So the three-phase, I'm going to use a three-legged table analogy for this one. So I'll give you a visual of what that looks like. You got three guys holding up a table. You've got, and when it's balanced evenly, those guys carry that table pretty good. When it's not balanced, you got a seven-course meal sitting on one leg, and that guy's working pretty hard. That's inefficient, and that creates losses. And so an uneven distribution, there's too many customers on one single leg, or you've got a large customer on one leg, that tends to teeter that balance to make it so that it's unbalanced. You've also, if you got faulty equipment, like a blown fuse or stuff like that, it can also make that unbalanced. The consequences is, you know, equipment overheating and reduced motor life and increased energy cost. So, what do we do to mitigate that? We go through and we look at, well, first thing we do is when they engineer these substations, these new, or not substations, subdivisions, they'll balance out those loads. They'll take, I got this transformer, they'll balance it out best they can. And that's done up front when they build a residential, when they build the services out, when they build a substation. Subdivision out. So, also the substation department, we can look at those legs, each one at the substation level, and say, you know, we've got A's got 30 amps, B's got 60 amps, and C's got 20 amps. We've got to take some of that load off B and move it to the other phases, and that helps balance it out too. That's reported to the engineering department, and they contact the lines department. They go out and make those changes where they can.
So you physically switch wires?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, we've had third-party firms come in and like that line flow, that load flow study. It'll tell us where we've got balancing problems, and we'll look at that and reconfigure our system to compensate for it. So the better we can balance our system out, we don't have one guy holding up all the load, creating heat creating inefficiency, and then system losses. So this minimizes current flow discrepancies, thereby improving power quality, reducing heat, and reducing system losses.
I have a couple questions. We'll go back to one of Randall's early slides when he had all the numbers pulled up to 5.56 and 3.99. I don't remember the number when he presented last month, but he mentioned our 5.56. What was the stamp, like the average for?
It was just over 5.
Was it just over 5?
Yeah, it was, well, maybe just under 5, because we were talking about a 1%. So it's probably the 4.5, 4.6 range.
And so how common is it for a utility to have a 1.57 add? Or is that standard across utilities? Or is that unique to us?
I don't
think
so.
If you're in the energy balancing authority, it's common to you. One of the things that's very difficult with KRTA is that it says on your financial statements you bought this much energy and you sold this much energy and everything else is a loss. And that number that they give, then you look and say, okay, what's the median that you get to look at? If you compare us, our entity where we serve Moapa, Logandale, and Overton, and then we send the rest of the energy to Mesquite, and you compare our losses to the city of St. George, who sells the same amount, but everybody's in a tight, their losses are wildly different than ours. There's no differentiating that with the KRTA. That's the downfall of that report. And so then you have to dig in and say, okay, what we do is amongst the best practices when we talk with NREA, our neighbors, as we say, what does your loads look like? And when we go to classes, we talk about if you have 100 miles of transmission, then what's your line loss?
I get that. I'm just trying to understand the ratio that he was presenting. If the standard is, you know, 4 point something, are they having a similar adder? Is that unique because we're going to NV Energy? Well, we don't really know that.
We there's no way we would know that. I mean, the only way we know is because we have it with NV.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You haven't talked to your peers or the NRECA?
We haven't delved into that at all.
Okay, just curious.
And I believe the 1.57 was a negotiated settlement when the line was put in. Depending on what they sent and what we received, that's not how they arrived at the 1.57.
The negotiation on that was that for the first 80-plus years, they charged us 2%.
That's right.
And part of our negotiation was that their NITS customers were all paying 1.57, and so we went down to 1.57.
Well, because of the power plant. put in, re-yarder.
Well, it was the line is when we negotiated that, but yes.
Yes, right, but it was the line,
re-yarder, yes.
Caused the change, because now we knew exactly what it was, as opposed to the original estimate, I guess you might say.
Round number.
Yeah.
And so if that ratio was done again, you're saying that instead of 5.56, we'd be at 4.22?
No, we're going to be in the three, I think above three, with taking the adder out. I'm saying the adjusted, with the adjusted, I think we'll be in the 3 to 4% range.
And the line being completed.
And the line, oh yeah, the line.
The line has to be completed as well.
Okay, but our true is 3.99. What we're losing internally in our system has nothing to do with the adder, because that's how much we bought and how much we... So that's a good, that's a real good number, isn't it?
It's a good number.
Yeah, we think so.
I agree. Well, thank you. This is wonderful.
These are my favorite kind of topics, because many times you guys go to a class or we have somebody come in, and Kirk's presentation, his point of his presentation, or that piece of it, was to say, if you invested in some infrastructure, you could reduce your line loss, which would then save you some money, right? That was the financial point of it. But you guys keyed in on, our line loss is high. Well, and the thing that I love about this is that then we get the opportunity to show you that these are all of the things that we check every year. We're reviewing this and we're paying attention to the efficiency of our system. And these men know exactly what they're talking about when it comes to our line loss and the efficiency of our system. So keep asking the good questions. And yeah, now when we ask you guys about VARs, you better associate that to Diet Pepsi. And I'll just tell you.
Water and juice, you're done with VARs.
The difference is when I came to work here and Delmar gave me that talk, it was all about beer. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's right. Well, beer's worse.
So this is for discussion only, Mr. Chair.
Well, that was an outstanding presentation. You can tell some serious work and studying and putting that together. So thank you guys. Okay, item K, public comment.
Is that discussed every month on these meetings? That was 45 minutes of basic electricity 101 times whatever.
That's, I mean, I'm just asking,
why was that back and forth here between them? Again, I'm sure you have a great answer. I was just curious.
We don't discuss that every month, but last month we had a presentation that we did for them on financial metrics. Okay. And line loss came up in that discussion, and so then the board directs staff to give them more information. We're always this fun, just not always on that topic.
That makes sense. We wish we could all be engineers, but we're just not. Some can spell it. Anyway.
Any other public comment? Okay. Nobody's in Mesquite.
Trustee comments, aye.
Perfect.
I just wanted to comment. The meetings in Nashville went to some really good classes. The ethics class was really a good class. And I'd say if you haven't taken that, take that class. You know, talked about, you know, how we make the decisions, how we use our own moral judgments, and how we can apply those in the boardroom. So it was a very good class. Had great speakers that were there and really motivating. And you know, when the guy comes out and he's had both legs and both arms blown off, you know, and he's making jokes about it, it just brought tears to my eyes. Mm-hmm. Travis came out and talked about you know, what happened in his life and how it's turned into a positive in his life. He's helping other veterans and those type of things in his life.
I just have a quick question. Layton Woods, his wife posted an interview that he did. Talked about his accident last year, talked about some of the stuff that he went through. If you guys haven't seen that, it's kind of a cool little video. I would recommend.
Where's it posted?
On YouTube.
Okay.
Just punch it in and you'll find it. But probably what brought that, one of the questions it brought up, coming back to that accident, have we kind of mitigated some of that issues that made that apparent, and we numbered those lines. I just, as I was looking, I kind of said that to release a little bit, But I'm just
But you knew I was at the legislature. I couldn't watch that, Randy.
It's pretty cool. But we go back and we finished out those, you know, number of those lines to make sure that those accidents are limited.
Yes, yeah, so we've corrected all the tooling processes, revisited all that. Now, labeling all the lines is going to take, we in fact met today, me, Cody, and Omar on that and laid out our goal to complete that. It's going to take 2 years at 35 individual pieces of equipment a week to get through that. So it's going to take a long time. But what we've done in place of that, so that there's no risk for that, is if they get to an area, they still have, like, we've updated our practice and revisited our practices so that they have to be visually identified before they're able to proceed.
Correct.
So if those PC labels aren't done yet, it's not that they can't do the project or they can't get it safely accomplished. It's that they have to verify and get that finished.
So basically
before.
Some of the practices you guys are doing have updated that, you changed that to where, you know, when I saw that video, I'm just like...
I didn't get a chance to speak on it, but that's what Cody and Omar spoke on last week at Best Practices, was all of our underground practices that we've updated since last year.
You guys have all the tools you need, everything is up to snuff. Yeah. You know, it breaks my heart when I see that stuff, but it's a good lesson at the same time, so...
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, thank you.
Do you agree with all that, Cody?
I don't like my name thrown around.
Oh.
You
got
it.
Front row. Back row was taken.
Anyway, I just appreciate that. If you guys haven't seen that video, that little interview of Layton, interesting. I would definitely watch that.
Let's look at AM approval of next board meeting, Wednesday, April 15th. Mesquite office.
Wait a minute.
I support that.
That's not the right.
April 15th was the third Wednesday. You guys approved it.
What? That's all I moved.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was thinking we were in Ely on the 14th, so sorry. Yeah, it's April 15th. Proceed.
We all good?
We're good.
Yeah. Possible action?
I move we approve.
Okay, we have a motion.
Who did that, Rick?
Mike. That was
Mike. Mike. Okay.
I'll second that.
Rich has got a second.
Okay, thank you.
Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, I know we have a lengthy executive session. So
you guys go get a snack and a break, and then we'll be back.
Well, that's well said. It's going to be done quickly. That's right.